Welcome to This Week in FX PhD, your weekly wrap-up and behind the scenes at fxphd.com.
Hi, and welcome to This Week at FX PhD. John Montgomery with you as always, and joined by this week, Bill Maher. How's it going, my friend?
What?
I don't know. I don't know.
Where'd that come from? Hey, yeah, no, it's great. In fact, I'm really lucky guy today because it's been pouring with rain in Sydney, and it's just today decided to stop raining. I mean, literally, like, you know, the most amount of rain we've had in my city in 18 years in a day kind of thing. Today, sun comes out, and guess what I'm doing today? I'm taking a half day off work and going sailing.
And
I already planned to do that.
Was it raining Australia Day? Was it raining
Australia Day? Yeah, it was raining Australia Day. Okay. Yeah. So we're recording this on a Thursday in Australia, but Wednesday in the US, and it, like, for 3 or 4 days in Australia, it's been like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, just pouring. I mean, really downpours. And then, today's sun's
Was light. The office floor filled with water? And
Well, not quite. The main leak we had in the office was fixed, but there was so heavy. We have another leak in the kitchen, which thanks for reminding me, because I was in a happy mood until then. But
sorry.
That's right. It's not.
But no equipment.
Horrendous. No.
FX PhD related technical carnage.
No, it just means that the coffee machine needs to be dried out.
Oh, well, that's actually pretty serious. Anyway, we're in what week are we? Week number 4 of the term. Having a great time so far this term. I've been actually spent some time over the weekend getting up to speed on some of the classes. We frankly have so much stuff to watch that I admit I can't watch it all, but it was nice to catch up on some of that. Also appreciate those of you who have been referring people to FX PhD. Posted or sent out a tweet about it last week, and several of you actually referred to us new members this week. I saw several of them come through in response to the tweet or the Facebook post, so we appreciate that. And we're already actually, Mike and I were just starting to talk about next term.
Yeah, some promising stuff on the next term horizon, but we're a little early in the
to be and the next anything. Term after that. Yes, just a bit early.
Yes. It's good. I think that things have settled down well, and as far as the new term goes. It was and always is, I guess, a little weird at the beginning of this term because it sort of hits Christmas, New Year. So certainly in Australia, a lot of people I know aren't back at work until the third week of January. But that's fine, of course, because you can always catch up on classes and come up to speed with anything that, you know, if you join, no matter when you join, of course, you can, you know, watch the classes that are already out.
Yeah, and it's also a good time. I was thinking too as well, the new term, because of that, it's a good time to try new stuff out in the web. And I appreciate some of the feedback on some of the changes on the site that we made in early January with the courses page, and now the preview classes page as well is a bit different. People wanted to have a bit more information on those pages as well. So we added the filtering stuff that I had on the courses page to the class previews to hopefully make things easier to find for everyone, because due to the sheer number of classes or courses that we have at FX PhD, that list was getting more and more, frankly, unwieldy to go through. And so it's fairly easy to actually implement some of that filtering stuff that we did for the courses page to the previews page. So that if you're looking just a specific material or looking for types of classes in the previews, that's a great way of doing it. Yeah.
So how much of our code, this is a complete rat hole, how much of our code that you would call our site is, would you say, custom stuff? And how much is, if you had to build it tomorrow, you just could instantly buy it and just switch it on? Like, how far has it come?
So the items that run our class infrastructure, I guess you'd call it. So from the standpoint of the courses page, the previews page, how everyone gets their materials, the course certificate, that stuff is all very much custom code. Very much related to the stuff that we actually started out developing when we started FX PhD in the very first term, though over time the code has been modernized pretty dramatically. so forth. And obviously the changes, like we got rid of torrents and things like that. So you've got that aspect of it, which is complete custom, and you could not buy. You could buy something similar. And then as those of you who took the SysAdmin courses we did, that I taught, including the one about, you know, building your online presence, the blog, the front page, the main site, everything but the forums is actually a WordPress foundation. And then the forums are still using stock software that we could replace and that we are looking at replacing, frankly, as well. So they're basically kind of three aspects of it. You've got our FXPHD infrastructure, which deals with all the courses, 100% custom. We have to write them ourselves. We have people to do that, or I do that. Second part is the forums, which is one aspect of it, vBulletin, and the third part is WordPress. Though the current look of the site was actually, I use what's called a framework, and I actually coded the theme for that.
Yeah, and I really like layout. Your graphic design, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a cleaner, responsive, more mobile-friendly look. That's the other thing, actually, about the courses page and the downloads page. Those are also much more friendly, so if you're somewhere and you want to check out the previews or something like that on your tablet or your phone, that's also very responsive. But I don't know. So what, 30% completely us? And the other ones
Are
probably 50%.
Well, yeah, except it's a bit like saying, because, I mean, you know, the way that you're saying it and the way I phrase the question completely diminishes the skill in plugging the bits together properly and making them all work as one. And work quickly as in terms of how we serve stuff. And what about FX Guide? Like, because I know I've caused you to write some code and do some stuff. Yes. The one that just, I don't know if you guys ever scroll to the bottom of FX Guide and there's a clock that shows the time in every city.
Is that clock wrong?
Well, is it almost 2 o'clock in LA?
No, because right I remember, it is right, correct in Sydney. Yeah.
Yeah, it's correct in LA. The only problem is it's going to be listed as Chicago and you're not currently in Chicago.
And that's from, no.
But we have the Chicago
home
office.
Is there.
Yeah, no trouble at all. But yes. And so that has been.
So that's very custom.
That's an affectation that has been on the site for a very, very long
since
time.
Since the beginning.
Yeah.
The initial banner of FX Guide had little clocks and our little locations on a world map.
Mainly because we couldn't work it out.
That's right, exactly. But yeah, FX Guide is very much WordPress centric, but with a lot of custom codes to create the podcasts and things like that. So, much more custom at FXPHD than FX Guide.
Yes.
Because obviously the stuff we're doing with the courses and getting stuff in the members' hands and tying those to privileges and access to the forums, that all that stuff is just much more complex than the stuff on FX Guide.
So the page at the very, very, the thing at the very bottom with the clocks, I think you should make the click buttons on that. Just to, sorry, I'm just kidding. I'm just teasing. Sorry. So while we're on the podcast, I'd just like to read.
I believe, though, Mike, in future planning, I believe that we need to make FX Guide a responsive site this year, however.
As opposed to not being a responsive site?
I'm just bring that up. One that... yes, correct. As opposed, it's currently a non-responsive site. In other words, when you look at it in your iPhone, it's just a small version of the site versus reformatting as FXPHD does.
And I would support.
So, yes.
As I'm not going to be doing the work.
You're quite supportive. Yes.
Yes. It.
Exactly.
It's not by design, but it's certainly evolved that I spend a lot more time writing articles and you spend a lot more time coding the terrific infrastructure that that allows people to read said articles.
We have our, yes. And on PhD, pretty much the same thing holds true as well. So anyway, thanks guys for actually providing feedback. Some of you emailed me directly, some posts in the forums. It's always actually really useful to get feedback from people. I mean, just sitting with Mike, when I showed him the new courses page, we came up with a couple ideas and, you know, fresh frame of reference, fresh eyes. Like, I like the idea of a minimal list view, for instance, someone mentioned for the courses page, you know, something that's much more compact.
Yes. Idea. Actually, I'd love a minimal.
Not happening
I'd
overnight.
I'd like a minimal list for articles in FX Guide. I'd like it so when I could have a iTunes podcast type summary list of options so I could see, because I'm always referring back to stuff on FX Guide, and I'm like having to scroll and hit the next button and scroll and hit the next button. And also what you need to do is change our search. No, I'm just kidding. That's right. Anyway, so.
I like that idea.
I would actually like that.
But anyway, the point is, we enjoy. I will say I do appreciate that feedback from everyone, members and so forth, about how to make stuff easier for you guys. Because we are, while the site does look different than it has in the past, it's very much under the hood. There's some major changes going on that make things easier to do and easier to get done. So if you have any suggestions, yeah, post in the forums. I'm always happy to hear feedback from you guys.
Yes. No, very much the case.
Not you, Mike.
Not me. No, that's all right. I'm good. I'm okay.
He's right. My number one feedback giver.
Yeah.
Mike Seymour. So what you got going on?
Well, apart from the fact that I'm taking most of the day off, goes sailing. I'm actually going sailing with some really interesting guys, including Mark Sager from Auckland University, you'd know from Background Fundamentals, did Baby X, and guy who makes ASIC chips that do H.264, which I think I'm going to be the stupidest person on the boat today. And if I get hit in the head by a boom coming across, definitely the stupidest person on the boat.
Can you get me a stat? I'm really curious. I'd love a status report on H.265.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Kevin
chips
the guy.
And what the stat? Yeah. So,
so Kevin, who's a very good friend
any of, scoop that you can get me.
Yeah, Kevin, who's a very good friend of ours, left a sort of more established, larger company, set up a like a 2-man startup to make and design ASIC chips. So I think it's just incredible, and then sold it into. I can't discuss the details, but imagine an incredibly large manufacturer of sort of consumer type products, and they were like, well, we have this. H.264 engine in silicon and did a licensing deal. And so for the last X number of years, in addition to anything else that's been doing, they just answer questions from the licensee. I think it's incredible that you live in an age that you can work out of your apartment with a mate and design chips and sell them into phenomenally large electronics companies. and it's all, perfectly reasonable and sensible, and everyone's really happy to do it. But yeah, that's the age we live in. But yeah, absolutely, he's Mr. H.264 and understands it at a level I wouldn't even begin to comprehend.
Yeah, the most recent versions of Handbrake have X265, which is the encoder for H.265. But obviously, playing it back becomes a problem.
Yeah.
Because so many of the phones, everything that we have has that hardware decoding kind of effectively built in now, which is really critical. For heat generation and processing speed, battery life, and so forth. And that's where those chips are so critical nowadays.
I don't know if you've been involved in chip manufacturing much, another rat hole, but the thing about them that I find astounding is, like, if you're writing software and you have a bug, well, you just fix the bug, right? Like, it's just, whatever. The thing about chips is you're going to have, a number of revs, rev A, rev B, rev C, whatever. But by about rev C or whatever, you're really, locking it in. Well, I mean, can you imagine writing your code if you're like, okay, you've got 3 goes at this, and if you've got any bugs after 3, it's probably game over. You can't, I mean, obviously you can simulate stuff, obviously you can do a bunch of stuff, but when you actually start making silicon, it's sort of locked in. And I find the hardware engineers, the guys that do that stuff, to be remarkable. And of course, we all benefit from it, right? I mean, everything from the GPU technology to what happens in terms of our everyday existence with the number of custom chips and stuff that in something like an iPhone. And we all look at the central processor and think of an Intel, but there's a ton of other stuff that handles a bunch of other stuff in a, say, a phone or a computer, from various motion detectors to whatever. I mean, I've got a new Fitbit on my wrist, and it's a tiny little thing, and it monitors my heart rate constantly and stuff, in addition to everything else that it used to do. I'm kind of astounded by how much they manage to fit in a Fitbit, and how, but the thought of getting all that sort of has to be custom silicon to kind of make the form factor and the low energy consumption. Hardware engineer designs that write effectively code in hardware in silicon are just astounding individuals. That's way beyond what I could imagine. I need a lot more you know, hey, I can do a second take, I can do a third take. Sometimes I do more than three takes when delivering something. I don't do many takes on background fundamentals, but I can tell you when we do the O-Week videos, trying to get those suckers, you know, really tight and whatever, or a wired piece. Yeah, I would hate to be like, okay, this is it. Don't get it now. You're dead in the water. In life,
yes,
there are...
Yes, the do-over.
It's a very, yeah, unforgiving career. But, yeah. It's interesting. I was discussing this with someone else the other day, the notion of software doing stuff. Was that you? I was talking about this. The notion that we increasingly have software that does stuff and you... Like my kids just think, oh, yeah, well, that's fine. And I'm like, you understand how much work went into making that so that it's so easy to do? And mm-hmm. I think it's important that people don't lose sight of that. We all know that. It's our industry, right? But for other people, they like sort of assume there's a button that does faces. There's a button that does building destruction. And you know, the amount of work that goes into producing a finite element analysis DMM model of TETs that will allow you to do a destruction sim really realistically, and then all you sort of feed the models in, of course, but even then it's still not that simple. And yet to the outside world you can get blasé with this technology and just say, well, of course, mm-hmm. just run a destruction sim, just run a fluid right. sim, like it's nothing. But there you go.
So, long story short, while you are sailing, you are, you know, it's work related.
It's pretty much not,
John.
It's pretty much all this one time off. I'm going to be sailing around the harbour with a bunch of mates. There are like five of us, and I imagine we're going to be sailing pretty hard. I doubt there's going to be a lot of detailed nuanced discussion. Maybe on the way back, rum and coke, nuanced discussion over something. But yeah, I think had a really interesting chat last night, by the way, getting back on topic a bit more with Vlado from V-Ray.
Chaos Group. Yep.
Yeah, really, really interesting chat. I've interviewed him before, and he is a very knowledgeable guy. He's very active in the community, well known. But if you've ever heard him interviewed, he tends to be a fairly non-aggressive speaker. So if you were in a lively discussion, he wouldn't interrupt to make a point. And yet, of course, it's exactly those guys that are some of the most interesting because they really have a considered response. And I think we spoke last night for like an hour and a half. It was like a really long, detailed chat. And I hadn't ever managed to have that with him before. I'd had good interviews with him before, but it was much more kind of point, you know, like sort of shorter kind of things where we got into a much deeper observational discussion about some of the technologies in rendering. So some of that's going to feed into background fundamentals and some of that's going over onto FX Guide. But yeah, it was really, really good to be able to do that. And there are a few of those guys. Marcos with Arnold is another one that, you know, if you can get them really engaged in a lengthy discussion about the topic, just fascinating what you learn. And so that was really good. I enjoyed that. But yesterday was a long day for me because I started at 6 a.m. doing interviews on stuff to do with the Disney Face project, which was the predecessor, I guess, in a way, to UCAP, which was a predecessor to MOVA, both of those two having just won the SciTech Oscar. So I think I was interviewing from 6 a.m. yesterday till 10 o'clock last night. So I don't feel so bad about taking the Savo off.
No, no.
What about you?
Well deserved. Same deal. Actually, basically, it's again still kind of very much in the new part of the term aspect, helping the profs out quite a bit, shuffling around gear and things like that. I've also been battling actually internally what we use here in the States for backup. Are you familiar with Retrospect? Did you ever hear the Retrospect
yep.
backup application?
Yeah, I totally remember.
The new one's a turd.
Okay.
Sorry if anyone's offended by that, but it's like I spend an extraordinary amount of time dealing with bugs, rebuilding catalogs, things like that. It used to be a great app, but it seems to have lost its way as far as stability, speed, and usefulness. Even just searching through stuff is clunky and slow and painful. It's one of these apps that has multiple moving parts. You've got a system process running in the background, an app in the foreground that then loses connection to this process. So it's just awful. So I've started using Brew PE Edition, which is a really cool backup system from the Talos group. These are the guys who actually write code for OS X that allows tapes to be supported under OS X, because if you don't know, for those of you who don't know, actually there is no tape support by default in OS X, unlike every other variety of Linux out there. So they basically built these core tools, and on top of that, they built an archival software. One's called Brew. It's quite expensive. The one that I've been using is called Brew Producers Edition, which is actually targeted towards creative people, you know, things like media archiving, and even has some Final Cut hooks that will actually look at your Final Cut project and grab all the material and save it off to an LTO for you. And Mike, I've got to tell you, it's like, it's a life-changing experience from the standpoint of not wasting time managing archives.
Wow.
I'm just, I've started to basically take all of our retrospect archives, restore them, and one by one, put them back into Brew. First of all, because Brew is transferable to Linux workstations or Windows workstations, it's very much cross-platform. You have to install their tools and so forth, to, an app to actually have access. But I feel like there's a future there in the application, and it's robust. And really smart application. I mean, there's some things that aren't perfect with it, but just compared to wasting an inordinate amount of time dealing with bugs, I just find that so so frustrating. It's just such a complete waste of time to have to, say, rebuild a catalog. I just rebuilt the one, remember the 3210 shoot that we did up in Central California. I rebuilt that catalog twice in the past 2 weeks, and that process takes almost 2 days to do that, just to simply read it. So recreate it. So I recreated it, got corrupted, recreated again, got corrupted, recreated it, and now I'm in the process of moving over to Brew. So
it does seem
so far
to me,
so good.
Yeah, it does seem to me the thing about backups that's always been important to me is, well, obviously, does it work? Because if it doesn't work, there's monumentally. That's the whole point. But the second thing is you want to know that what you're doing has a future moving forward because, you know, quite frankly, the nature of backups and archives, obviously they're closely related, is you tend to want to go back to them, maybe not in the case of an emergency backup, but, you know, generally an archive certainly, go back to them a considerable amount of time later. And so if you had stuff formatted in a way with a program that's kind of obsolete or no longer staying current with the OS that you're on or anything like that, you've just sunk. I mean, it's a very long-term marriage picking a software and a system for doing that kind of work.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you bring up the distinction between archive and backup, because I'm actually using Retrospect and Brew Producers Edition effectively for archiving. At least fairly long-term storage of material that we might want to have access to someday. I will say that Retrospect, one good thing about Retrospect does is it does provide a way to back up multiple computer systems within a facility over the network so that you could have, you know, all five workstations being backed over nightly to a rotating LTO, for instance. That way, as a backup, in case there's an emergency and something happens to that system, you can quickly get that material back. So that is one thing that Retrospect in theory does well. I just don't have many. I don't have more than the three systems I have here to test with that. But that's one thing that the Producers Edition by default is not quite as easy to do. So backups for backups, less useful for archive. It's outstanding.
Yeah, yeah. I honestly can't overestimate how valuable it is. I mean, obviously, I benefit because I'm in the company. But like, when you've got someone in your position, getting your advice, because it's, you just can't tell this stuff from looking at the web pages. You know, like, you can't tell what's actually going to work well. I think one of the things that PhD I've always felt can offer is a, you know, unbiased, non, I'm going to take obviously financial things from anyone, opinion on which of these paths is a good path to go on and why. And then the other thing that works really well is you get that as a discussion in the group. And so if you guys have points about this, you should post in the forums because, you know, it's just, it's not a matter of word of mouth. It's just practical experience over considerable periods of time normally. I mean, for example, I back up my laptop using, you know, the Mac Time Machine. Never had to actually restore a backup because my Mac's been lost or whatever. I just naively think that if it was to happen, it would work. Now, I'm pretty comfortable with that because if Time Machine didn't work, there are obviously quite a lot of users out there and you probably would have heard about it. But, you know, in this particular case, it's like an insurance policy. You don't know if the insurance company is going to not pay out unless you know somebody that's been through that experience, and God forbid that it should be you. So, yeah, if you guys have information, as much as it's invaluable getting an expert opinion, and I definitely call you an expert in this area, John, it's great hearing from everybody's and sort of collectively pitching in.
Yeah, very, very much so, because I'd be curious if other people have experiences with other bits of software. I mean, I just happen to be a fan of these guys. I used to use them probably 10 years ago when we had a workstation. It was back at Avenue Edit Days, and I used their software then. Been around effectively since the mid-80s, mid to late 80s. The fact that they have a CMX 3600 add-on for the Brew Personal Edition, Producer Edition, kind of tells you they've been around for a while, or more specifically, service our industry. So it's, again, big fans of theirs. It's not inexpensive. It's about $500 for the single license copy of this, but that ranks more expensive than Retrospect does. But in my estimation, this works. So worth it for the extra money.
Yes. Yes,
and confidence.
Works and confidence is a big aspect, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. My stating, yes, a bit obvious, but yeah, very true. So anyway, so that's been a good thing. That's been been looking at it for the last couple of months, but really diving in seriously into it, and again, in the last couple of weeks. So it's been quite a useful time here. And as you say, I feel much more confident about where we're at with all of our hundreds of LTO tapes that we have.
Yeah, we generate quite a bit of data here at the old FX PhD.
yes, and it's also, you know, in addition to that stuff, it's also just simply managing the backups for the various websites, which we have backing up currently to online cloud location. It's backing up using a script to a computer here in Los Angeles, and also backing up to Ryan's computer in Chicago as well. So all of our various sites that we have are backed up twice daily to these locations.
Yeah, I should say that while I've not had to back up my laptop from restore it from a backup from Time Machine, we have absolutely had to restore the sites because of a couple of reasons, haven't we, John? Like, that is something that we've actually totally had to do. You've got the site back from a problem.
Death.
Or yeah,
hardware failure.
Yeah.
I mean, it's literally, as with anything, your best plans, what's the phrase? Anyway, we had a rated system drive and generally all the stuff in it, but both the RAID card and a drive failed. So that was our main catastrophic. That's really the only really catastrophic time that we've had problems with our sites. But yeah, that's when you need it. It's more often than not. Maybe something like the use of my SQL database to actually drive the back end of where all the data is stored regarding the courses and WordPress and things like that. Occasionally that does become corrupted, and we've had to restore those files as well. That happens a bit more often than just the, yes, complete and utter failure of the site. So.
Not with us, but my old company. We had this really expensive RAID and it failed. And I was like, okay, so we'll just swap a drive out. And they went, yeah, no, not that. And I went, why not? And they went, well, the thing that died was the RAID controller. And I was like, what? And they're like, well, it's completely redundant at the RAID controller. The drives are all fine. And I'm like, well, what's the point of having the RAID if one component dying makes it useless? And they're like, yeah, well, what do you expect? And I'm like, I thought what I was getting was a system that if something fell over, we'd be all right.
Right.
No, it's just one road controller. And we can't seem to get one for like a week. So there's nothing we can do. You're just dead in the water. And I was like, so yeah, it's a complicated process to get a system that is bulletproof.
Yeah. And nowadays, now many of our servers, or actually all of our servers now, as of 3 months ago, are all basically virtual servers in the cloud. Though they are obviously databased at some point, but they also have various snapshots that happen. So twice a day, the websites get snapshotted. And so basically, we can always roll back at the maximum time would be 12 hours, I guess, should something happen to the main site. That's another level of backup that we have online. So it's definitely getting easier over time, I have to say. Apart from my battles with Retrospect are probably one of the worst. The online stuff is getting better and better.
Well, I have to get going, my friend. I've got a call into ILM. We're doing some stuff with them, and I have to just get ready for that. But it's been terrific talking to you. And of course, as we always do, we try and do this Week in FX PhD to give you kind of that sense of the conversation going on and just what's happening around the office that you would get if you were in a bricks and mortar kind of operation. In fact, when we started what was then called the DoD, that was the whole point, just so you guys had some feeling of, you know, what was happening day to day and some sense of the conversation that would happen if you were hanging out with us and meeting us each day. You're not, but we hope that from time to time you'll get the feeling of that with the This Week in FX PhD.
Informality of this podcast, of this. And yeah, I appreciated John Vegan, who's teaching some of our Flame classes this term, actually responded that he actually thought that the person who developed the Zapruder film is actually based in Dallas. So as I mentioned in podcast last week, I thought that might be a Chicago legend or Chicago myth about that being developed in the same building, but it'll be interesting to find out if that's true. So it's really nice to hear from you guys. My point is, it's really nice to hear from you guys who do listen, provide feedback, questions, whatever. It's nice to know there are people listening.
All right, guys, until next time, see ya.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is copyright FX PhD.